Hello there, friends. To start off this new year, I will be interviewing someone as almost more of a response to show the other side of things, to show their other perspective. My last interview was with a friend of mine from Twitter, sharing his perspective on the election results and concerns. And I said after that interview that I wanted to have someone on from the other side, from the other perspective, just to balance things out, because I like to have multiple perspectives on my channel. I met my next guest from Instagram, actually. It's my first Instagram find, and his name is Piwa, and he is a traveling evangelist of sorts. And he is also an art dealer for his father, who does traditional carvings, and we talk about that in a little bit in the beginning. And then we go into his perspective of why he has fallen on the more conservative end of things, on the Republican side. I think that you guys will enjoy this discussion. You can tell he's really thinking through why he's saying what he's saying. And as always, I would like to hear your comments, your questions. And I hope you guys have had a great holiday season. And as always, if you have not yet, please do not forget to subscribe. Okay, now we're starting officially. Okay, so we need to start with how to pronounce your name.
All right, so officially I go by Piwa. My Instagram handle is just Piwa.
Yeah.
But my full name is Sapiwa Rujua.
Okay, so what can we give? Can you give a little origin story?
Yeah, I can give a background. Yeah. So I'm originally from Zimbabwe, South Central Africa, Botswana, Mozambique, Zambia, that area. Moved to the United States when I was 8 years old. That was in 1998. My parents and I, we moved here on political asylum.
And, what was going on in that time then? Were you needing that?
So Zimbabwe is an interesting country, had an interesting history, like a lot of African countries with colonization and all that. So yeah, they were colonized by the British, gained independence in 1980. And then at that point, Robert Mugabe, who was the president for what ended up being about 38 years or so, or something along those lines, 35. Became prime minister in 1980. 1988, he rectified the constitution, something like that. Made himself president. And he was president till about 2018. So around 1998, my father was actually involved in politics, but he was on the opposing party of Robert Mugabe.
Oh, dangerous.
Yeah, dangerous stuff. So
yeah.
So at that time in 98, there was a lot of torturing of political enemies going on. A lot of intimidation, that whole nine yards. So, you know, my father was kind of like, yeah, I love my life. I love my family. And it'd probably be a good idea to skedaddle and get out of here. So thankfully, the United States was like, yeah, we agree. You have all the documentation and your case is strong. So come on in.
Mm-hmm.
Here I am.
Okay.
And before we go further, I just want to say congrats on the hair. You barely made the corona cutoff. I know.
Dude,
you guys are
Okay. Piwa is my friend from Instagram, my first Insta connection I'm actually having on here, because it's hard to get to know people on Instagram. Anyway.
It is. But, and it doesn't help that I don't have a Twitter either. So
right, yeah, that's where I mostly hang out. But I tweeted about my getting my hair cut. Sorry, not tweeted. I'm so that's used to Twitter. Instagrammed. Instead, however you say it, like about my hair getting cut. But yeah, I'm used to seeing your beautiful views from your balcony windows. And that was one of the first things I remember with regards to you is like, what does this guy do? I actually thought you were some businessman. So I was like, whoa, like, why are you in this beautiful, like, overlooking this beautiful, like, tropical beach or, like, whatever, you know, just beautiful spaces. I was like, every other day or week?
For sure. Every other weekend or every week or whatever, yeah. So, my father is a stone sculptor, right? In Zimbabwe, Shona art, we have a traditional art called Shona art. So he's a Shona artist, does stone sculpture. I can link you to our website. So he's an artist, and I'm an art dealer. I'm more of the, on the business end of it. So what I do is I go around the country and I showcase a lot of his art. And I have friends back in Zimbabwe who do Shona art as well. And I represent them. I import their work to the United States, and I go around and showcase it on the art shows, museums, galleries, and so forth around the country. A bunch of clients come out, collectors come out, check out the art. It's a good thing when they purchase it as well.
It's always nice.
Yeah,
business-wise, yeah.
Yeah, that's always a good thing. So, I mean, during the wintertime, I mean, right now with the coronavirus, a lot of things are kind of out of whack.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, during the winter, I usually do a lot of shows down south because it's warm. And during the winter, a lot of the older, rich people are going down south. So
No. I like how you were like, how do I put this delicately? Older, rich people.
Yeah. Older, rich people. They're going south.
It's the truth. It's the truth. Yeah.
Yeah, to be in the sun. So yeah, kind of following down there and do a lot of shows. So, I mean, around this time, I'm in Indiana right now.
Okay.
But around this time, I'd be in Florida, somewhere in Florida. Texas, just somewhere warm.
Yeah, except Corona's kind of put a wrench in that.
Yeah, it's put a damper in the whole thing.
But okay, yeah, well, for many. Okay, but I also, you kind of mentioned in our messaging that you're a traveling evangelist? Is that...
Exactly.
So let's hear a bit about that.
That's what I love the most about my job. I mean, the job itself is fun. I enjoy it. It's incredible. Meet a lot of people. And what I found is I, being a born-again believer, a Christian, I found that, you know, God kind of placed the opportunity in my life, being able to travel, in order that I may speak, you know, to the people that I run into in my travels.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, naturally, I'm a really friendly person. So, you know, before I started doing the evangelism thing, and I've only been saved for about 7 years now. But yeah, before, you know, I just travel with the job and just meet people and, you know, just talk to them. Wouldn't really be of fruition. Yeah, so I mean, the more I've started to grow in my relationship with Christ, my walk with Christ, knowing Him, grown deeper, in turn, I've just felt led to, it's kind of like an overpouring to speak that same life into people that I found. So... I mean, every day after the shows, they're usually from 8 to 5 p.m. Afterwards, I just go out into the streets, whatever city I'm in, speak to the in that city, if there is, you know, just ask them how they are, how they're handling everything. You know, if I go to a restaurant, I choose to sit at the bar because it's easier to spark a conversation with people that way.
Yeah,
so I do that whole 9 yards. And, you know, the goal, a lot of times evangelists get a bad rap because it's like you're trying to...
Sell something?
Yeah, sell something and convert people to Christianity or whatever. And really how I look at it and what the Bible says is only the Spirit can bring somebody to Christ, right? And so... How I look at it is I just have conversations with people. And, you know, sometimes it leads to us talking about, oh God, talking about the institution, the church, talking about religion in general. Sometimes we don't need to talk about religion, you know, but one thing I've come to realize is people don't care what you know unless they know that you care, right? And you can preach to people all you want. You can tell them everything that's in the Bible, word for word. If they don't truly believe that you're a person who genuinely cares about them, they're not, you know, it's going nowhere. Mm-hmm. And even if it does, even if it does, if you save somebody, if you bring somebody to Christianity, you can easily bring them out. Somebody else can easily bring them out.
Right.
If the Holy Spirit brings somebody to Christianity, nobody can bring them out. So yeah, I mean, I just go out, talk to people, talk to them about Christ, just break down barriers that may be stopping them from seeing Christ in a clear manner, who he is. Because I think the church, we've done ourselves a disservice in a lot of areas.
Well, people just want to know that you actually, yeah. So I don't know, man, from Instagram, from my gramming or whatever, I don't know if it's so clear that I actually am a Christian as well.
It's not as clear, which is a good thing, actually.
The Instagram is hard for communication of like, as like, do you not know my beliefs from my little pictures I put up? Like, my little stories.
My little two sentence bio or whatever.
Yeah. No, but like, I am. I've been a Christian pretty much since I was like 3. So yeah. it's I definitely know the pitfalls of wanting to convert someone and people seeing through it. And it just not like, it's like, no, I totally follow you, what you're saying there, but we will talk about this the whole time, so I'm gonna steer us towards the reason why we brought you here, by what we as in me and my conglomerate, why I've asked you today, because we're a little bit in and we've not broached the subject of politics, and we are going to. I'm gonna find out your motives and your reasons, and people will learn them as well, especially in light of my last week's interview, just to have a little bit of an other side, other perspective. And it's not like this wouldn't be like a, like, so here's this argument as to why this one is more correct or not. It's not that. I just like seeing people's perspectives.
Yeah, for sure. And I just want to say, I've watched a lot of different interviews you've done, and you have the most intelligent, well-spoken, intellectual people come on. So I'm just warning your audience right now, you're not gonna get anything special here.
No, but I want your story. No. But this special thing is like your story. Like you literally, how you presented yourself is like, here, in case like you need a guest.
I'm just thinking of myself less here.
No, but you did present yourself like literally. You're like, so I'm a black traveling evangelist who's also a Trump supporter. Like, those are your things, and so I was like, oh, I could use you right about now. So it works. No, this is exactly what this is, perfect. I never ask someone on if I don't have a place to go with them. Some people I've offered, I was like, I don't know where to go with you. You know, for some people, it's not that I don't like the person, but I have to have a thing I'm trying to get at. And so that's what I'm wanting to get out with you, because like one of the things that was said last week is, you know, people that the Republican Party is inherently racist, and it is not in people of color's interests to be part of that party. So I just am like, okay, well, let's look at this other perspective, and you definitely don't fit the bill that was being said last week. So sorry, I guess you fit the bill for my purposes for this week, I should say. So have you always been a Republican? That's what I'm wondering. Like, where have you been politically in your life?
So I'll start off with a funny story. Okay. I didn't grow up being or having any type of interest in politics. Like, you know, my father was in politics, but to me, it was just like, ah, that's his job, whatever. It didn't affect me. I moved to the United States. I was just like, eh, whatever, politics. I don't know what the Democrats are for. I don't know what the Republicans are for. Now, when I was in, I want to say seventh grade, George W. Bush, when his first term. All right, so I remember my cousin telling me it was during that presidential race. I remember my older cousin telling me, he was like, you know, if this guy, George W. Bush, becomes president, it's going to be the first time that a father and son have been president, like, of the United States. And
no.
Yeah.
No, John Adams, John Quincy Adams.
Yeah. But that's a funny story.
Okay.
He told me that, and I bought it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, that's freaking awesome. And from the point he told me that, I was like, I want George W. Bush to win. That was his running. That was the winning point for me.
Oh, that's so funny. What a funny, like, kids have that though. Those kind of reasonings.
Yeah. So I mean, that was my whole reasoning. So. Yeah, so that was my little intro into politics, and I mean, when President Obama came into office, first time around, that was really my real adult introduction into politics, because I was like, okay, I'm black, this guy's black. We're about to have the first black president. I wasn't really about policies at the time, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my gosh, first black president.
It's historic, you know? Though. Yeah, whichever way you look at it.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. And
were you a supporter of him then? Like, is that, would you call yourself a supporter of him or what?
Yeah. I think I was a supporter of something different.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't necessarily that I was a supporter of him. I'm just like, wow, first black president. And, I mean, I did support him, actually.
Yeah.
I didn't know the scope of his policies, so I can't say that I supported him, because I didn't really know what he was
and
about.
And it's hard to know those kind of things initially, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but I saw interviews of him on, on news channels and giving pressures and stuff like that, and he's talking about unity. And I'm like, oh man, this is amazing. We're ending racism, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was just exciting.
Yeah.
Fast forward to 2012. I was really starting to kind of dig more into politics at this time, and starting to look at the policies and starting to look at the narrative that were being written and pushed forward. And I was like, wow, this whole Obama guy, he's kind of switched up a little bit. I don't know, you know, he was talking about one thing in 08, and now he's kind of being a bully. I don't know, for lack of better words.
Why do you say that?
Okay, so 2008, he was like, okay, let's unite. We're one America. I don't see red. I don't see blue. We're just America. And then 2012, I think, I'm not sure which year the Trayvon Martin thing happened. I think it was around that time. He kind of started, so this is red, this is blue, we're one America. But he just kind of started going towards the blue while kicking at the red.
Mm.
So he'd say subtle things. I can't even think of anything right now.
Mm-hmm.
But he just kind of gradually started being divisive.
Okay.
And I mean, I still liked him at the time. These are just things I noticed in passing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like anything made to me. I was like, okay, whatever. It's politics. That's how it goes. So I liked him. You know, he was awesome, all that. And then we started having, around that time, you kind of had a lot of division, society, apart of, you know, Barack Obama being president. People were just like, wow, you know, this innocent black kid was walking down the street, walking from the store, bag of Skittles, an iced tea, his hoodie up, and a white guy who's a neighborhood watchman, killed him, right? That was kind of the whole narrative. You know, even though George Zimmerman wasn't white, you know, Hispanic American, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the narrative was just white versus black. You know, this wasn't Obama saying yeah. It was just in the media, you know, they're saying, okay, this white guy killed this black kid, innocent black kid. And then, you know, the facts start rolling out, you know. There were burglaries in the neighborhood before, a group of kids that looked like Trayvon Martin were allegedly the you know, suspects. And, and I just want to clear this. I'm not defending George Zimmerman.
Okay. At all. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah. But when this thing happened, the media just took it and ran with it. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, the media is being divisive, but we have this black president who's all for unity, and he's gonna step in and he's gonna be like, no, don't do that. Stop it. That's not right. Let's wait for the facts. Let's listen to the facts. And this is not systemic racism. It's an incident that happened, right? And it's a bad incident, but it doesn't speak for the United States as a whole today, you know. As you can see, I'm a black president, right?
Mm-hmm.
But instead, what he did was he went on and talked about, you know, if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon. You know, that whole thing. And from that point on, it's kind of like he forgot all about that. It's not red and blue. It's one America thing. You know, from that point on, he just started saying things of the same stature, just dividing more and more. And I mean, I wasn't too bothered by it. I was like, whatever. I wasn't too deep into politics. But then 2016, President Trump came along, right? I was like, oh, man. I really feel like Trump is saying a lot of the things that people on the right and people in the middle were thinking about during Obama's 2012, you know, 4 years. But I mean, they just didn't have the platform to say it. Nobody of that stature, like Donald Trump running for president, had the willingness to get up there and be like, you know what? This is a great country. You know, Republicans had almost gave up on saying we're a great country. And Donald Trump just came in and said, you know what? America is a great country. People from all over the world come here. They make something of themselves. You know, yes, we've made mistakes in our past, you know, as a nation, but we've grown out of those mistakes. And, you know, and basically he was saying what America is. But then by the time the media got a hold of what he was saying, there was a whole spin on it and sound bites and different things like that. So now you have the media running news stories on sound bites, not the actual spirit of what Donald Trump was saying at all, which a lot of United people in the United States agreed with, you know. But I mean, you just had sources like, you know, CNN, NBC, ABC, MSNBC, all these guys. They kind of had this monopoly on what information it gets out there and what people are taking in. So Trump would say what the American people agreed with at his rallies and whatnot, you know, which is why he got such a large vote count in 2016.
I have a few questions.
Yeah.
Okay. So what he's saying, what Trump was saying in 2016, mm-hmm. Do you think that the Democratic Party... Now, I know that Hillary herself she wasn't popular enough to really inspire. So not necessarily her, but the Democratic Party was like not saying America's great and like not saying that it's a good place and like, you know, to be and that, you know, we should all be happy to live here. Like, do you think they're not saying that?
sometimes the sin, and the media is good at this, the sin of omission is greater than a sin that's out in the open when you do something and it's sin. So where I'm trying to go with that is, and the news does this a lot, right? Mainstream news media. When Trump calls, when he calls them fake news, he's not, I don't think he is, saying that what they say is fake news, or rather, they're omitting certain things makes what they do fake, right? So, and I think there's, and this was the thing with the, going back to the Democrats, this was the thing with the Democrats. They kind of fed into the narrative of America kind of being this racist place, right? This place that was fueled by white men doing everything, white rich men doing everything they could to hold everybody else at bay, and corporations just running everything amok and yada yada yada. And you know, the Democrats kind of sat on the side and agreed with them with that narrative that the media was pushing, whereas Trump came in and said, no, America is great. You know, he actually said what America is. He didn't sit on the sideline and kind of just agreed with the narrative of what you know, what was being pushed at the time by the media.
Okay, there are some things, because, I mean, technically, even if the media does twist his words, he still has a direct line to the public through his Twitter account. I don't know. I know you said you're not on Twitter, but he's very active. And he can say directly, and a lot of the things are the same things that were in the news.
I think, and that goes back to what I was saying about the media, kind of, by the time it got out, it was Trump polled Mexicans rapists, and, you know, the whole nine yards. When in actuality, he was talking about the MS-13 games, if we were to play that clip in full. But the media never showed that, you know. They just kind of jumped in and said, oh, Trump wants to build a wall because the Mexicans are rapists, killers.
Do you ever encounter people who are upset that you're a Trump supporter?
When I first started saying that I was a Trump supporter, I think this was in 2000. At that particular time, to be a black Trump supporter was kind of like, you know, it was parody. Nobody was taking you seriously. They're just like, yada yada, whatever. And so, I mean, in 2016, 2017, people were just like, are you just saying that? You're crazy, this and that. I'd have little arguments where people are like, why do you love Trump? You know, he's racist. He hates your people. He said, like, for example, the country you came from is a S-hole country. Mm. What else? He doesn't want to call out white nationalists for who they are. Mm-hmm. You know, and not to sound cliche, but, and I know this line of argument is used all the time, right? But before Trump was, before he ran for president, he hung out with people like Jesse James, Al Sharpton, you know, civil rights leaders, right?
He did?
All these, yeah, certainly. He actually, I think he gave Al Sharpton an award of sorts. I'll have to look it up. Somebody will figure it out in the comments, I think. But yeah, he was hanging out with rappers. All the rappers in the world wanted to be like Donald Trump. You know, he was the epitome of the American dream. You know, everybody wants to be Trump. You know, he has reality shows. And his personality never changed. He had the same personality when he was on the The Apprentice, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was on The Apprentice show, as he does now as president. And I think people want politicians that tell the truth, but they don't want, they want politicians that tell the truth in the way that they want to hear the truth, right? And Trump is just not that type of person. He's not going to do that, right? He's going to...
It's weird because he kind of lies sometimes, and then he's like, oh no, I didn't mean that, I meant this. But people don't seem to care because he seems to be all living loosely, like, I can say whatever, I'm not muzzled. I okay. slipped. Whoops. And whereas politicians are so slippery, typically.
Yeah. But the thing about Trump is...
I'm not a fan of his. I'm sorry. I just think he's like only in anything for himself. And I just think he was like playing the part that he needed to for the job. But
hey, listen, I know my family is not for and a lot of my friends is not for the Trump.
The Trump. But,
the Trump, yeah. But the thing about Trump is it's ironic, like he's so comical that in order to digest him as a president, you have to be aware that you're eating bone-in chicken, right? You're still going to get the nutrition from the chicken, but you're going to have to spit those bones out.
Well, I've never heard that analogy before.
Yeah.
But it fits well.
Yeah, you know? And so he came in a time, he's the bone-in chicken politician, right? So,
Well, I know people why. Like his policies. Like, a lot of people do like his policies on the Republican side. What makes you Republican? What brings you towards them?
For me, when Trump ran, that's I kind of rubbed my hands. I was like, oh, man, it's about to get exciting. You know? I'm a bad
You don't think it was the straw that broke the camel's back, or like the flint being lighting the fire?
I think it was, but you have to understand, in the beginning, when Trump first said that he was running for president, even Republicans, people on the Republican side, thought it was a joke on the that side of the political aisle.
Yeah.
They thought it was a joke. Yeah. You know, nobody assumed that he was going to, or could have foresaw him winning, right? Democrats, Republicans alike. So.
What does that say? What does that say about America then?
I think America as a whole, the quiet, not the loud minority, but the quiet majority was just tired of the divisiveness I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, that they were seeing, right? So as a the quiet majority went out and they voted. I mean, you had people wondering where Trump was getting all these votes, you know? And they're like, wow, I can't believe that many people voted for Trump. I don't know a lot of people that like Trump. Well, yeah, because they weren't the loud voices. They were just the quiet, upset voices that you know, had lived through Obama's first 4 years of unity and let's come together as a country, and then saw him kind of make a U-turn in the second 4 years.
But isn't that just all politicians? Like, I know that Obama had the unity platform, but isn't that sort of like the typical what just happens? Like, why is it him particularly that you're like, oh yeah, they got tricked? Isn't that anyone? Every president?
Yeah.
They let you down?
Yeah. What separates what Obama did, though, is he attacked people on a personal level. A lot of presidents switch up in the second term, policy-wise, okay? I ran on this particular platform. Just kidding. I actually feel this way. But Obama, it was a personal attack. Like, he said, we want unity, and then second 4 years, you know, white people have some apologizing to do. Like, that's really personal.
Mm.
And as a white Republican or libertarian that voted for Obama in 2008, you're like, whoa, wait, hold up. I'm terrible. You know, this country that voted, he needed the majority. He got it. That voted the first black president in with a majority, this black person, and this country, these white people are racist. You know, I think a lot of people took that personally. You know, that's the difference between most presidential.
Okay. Well, that's fair. Like, that's a fair enough answer. I don't know as much about the particulars, except for since I've been on Twitter.
Yeah.
But then I wasn't on Twitter then.
I'll say this. I mean, when it comes down to it, I mean, in this particular period in time and political climate that we're in right now, or just the country of the climate of the country in general, not just like politics, I don't really think it's a left versus right thing per se right now, you know, or black versus white thing. And as cliche as it may sound, I think it's a original sin problem, you know. It's an identity problem.
Okay, I do think that there's a lot of with regards to identity. But I do want to go back. Can we put a pin in it? Because I want to come. I want to go back to you. To you mentioned about the votes for Trump, 2016, and then if we look at now for 2020, it was close for both elections, and even Hillary technically won the popular vote. I think technically maybe Trump even would have won the popular vote maybe this time around. I don't remember, but they both were so close. So doesn't that say that it's so divided? The country's so divided. It wasn't overwhelming for either elections. Mm-hmm. So it just seems like, I mean, some people thought of Trump as someone who will like help fix things, but it wasn't it wasn't like a silent majority. It was a silent half.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and yeah, no, I hear you. And when you look at how most Americans receive their information or who hands them the sunglasses and tells them that this is the lens you're going to see the country through. A lot of the institutions have been politicized to the left. So you look at movies, you look at sports, you look at a lot of the institutions right now, they have leaning. So if you take that into consideration, yeah, of course, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to lean left because that's all they're receiving, you know, from K through 12 and then through their televisions, you know, movies, sports, news.
Well, maybe depending on where you grow up.
As far as like which region and
depending on where you've been raised and which kind of types of states you're in. Do you think that?
Yeah, and I think that most definitely plays a part. I mean, it has to. But when we look at institutions, like actual institutions, I think we're such a connected world now that, mm-hmm. you know, back from the South, right, from the deep South, and with your hillbilly family, redneck family or whatever, and you guys have your set of beliefs, you know, that people in the North and other places don't have, right? But now we're so connected that being from a particular region isn't going to affect you as much as the media that we all share. We're all connected through the internet and especially the internet. So, I mean, in that regard, I think regional bias is almost not a thing anymore because we're just connected through the internet. And the internet also has a monopoly on or the left has a monopoly on.
Because I do think that you can find a bubble though, if you want. Like you can find a super conservative bubble or a super liberal bubble. Like I digress. Sorry. Because I've talked to both sides on with regards to like racism, especially during the riots in March and April, and I asked. I think I asked this to both of the guys who I talked with, but have you experienced racism personally? Because that's something that people who are maybe like, how could you say such things about America? You're black. You know what I mean? Depending on your political leanings and who's watching, some might be like, how can you say that? But you yourself must have experienced some sort of racism in this country.
Yeah, I mean, so for me, when I moved to the United States, I moved and went to a predominantly white school, I want to say maybe 95%. I was in third grade, right? And so when I first came to the U.S., I spoke English, right? But it was British English with an African accent. So, I mean, you couldn't really understand a lick of what I was saying, basically. And so, I mean, I had to kind of adjust. But one thing that I noticed as a kid, and these are kids, so I'm not saying that this speaks for our society, but I was in a predominantly white school, an African, with a few black kids. And many times that I was bullied and made fun of for what I looked like or what I sounded like, it was never the white kids that made up 95% of the school. It was always the black kids.
What? Right?
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of people, and I have other African friends who moved to the U.S. and they had the same experience, you know. It's surprising, I know. I'm going to have to try to find some, look up some research on that. Probably some type of statistics or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah. And I remember my favorite was the, I think cheetahs. How many cheetahs do you have at home or something like that? I mean, it was funny. You know, I wish I would have came to the United States around the time Tiger King was awesome. But then that would have been a compliment. How many cheetahs do you have at home? But yeah, yeah. But yeah, so I mean, like I was saying, getting away from that, I grew up in white neighborhoods all my life. And it's hard for me to think of one time that I faced racism. And I think another thing with that is when we moved to the United States, I didn't come here an attitude of expectancy. I wasn't expecting to be attacked based on my race. So my outlook on life, my lenses weren't colored with, oh, America is racist. But if they had been, I would have taken situations where humans were being human, just being mean for the sake of being mean, and turned it into a racial thing and said, huh, I think that's because they were being racist, not realizing that, you know, they did the same thing to my white friend yesterday. No, they're not racist. Those are just bad people. And I think that's the problem now is, like I said, the institutions, K-12, the media, they've put shades on people to where people can only see things from a perspective of. Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna push back a little because this is why I'm just.
And I'm not saying, I'm sorry, I'm not saying that racism doesn't exist because it does. There are okay. Racists.
Yes. Okay. Right. Yes. Yes. Like, but I'm such a centrist because when I'm talking to one side, it's like, well, but what about this? And then when I'm talking to the other side, it's like, okay, well, what if, But do you think that it nothing comes out of from a vacuum? Like there is something that existed in the United States that is the history of why such things are viewed in this way, because of slavery, like because the black people in the United States are descendants from those slaves who started, those people who were like taken from Africa and stole, you know, and then brought here and made slaves. And they had to make their home in a place that they were not wanted as human beings, you know? And I understand that you could look at something in a certain way, a certain lens, and then in another lens, and it might be more helpful to look at it from a different lens. But that history of it seems so strong to me. And I can understand why there's that lens, though.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I totally agree with you. Yeah, and that lens didn't come out of a vacuum, right?
And sometimes it's true. Sometimes people are just racist.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, I think it's very important to not try to gloss over history. History is important. These are bad things that happened, and we have to acknowledge them, or else we won't learn from them. And I think as a country, we've grown quite a bit from where we were. And I think the issue comes when people don't necessarily want to learn and recognize the history, but actually want to take the history and apply it to our world today that is far removed from those terrible years of our nation, you know? And I think it can be, in a weird sense, an empowering tool, knowing that, how do I put this? This is a, I gotta walk.
Careful.
Okay, so it's kind of like a bat that you can beat people over the head with if they disagree with you on something. So and they can't say anything to you after you hit them over the head with the bat of
your racist
slavery.
And slavery,
because if they try to hit back, now they're racist. So it kind of gives you a type of weird
like power. Okay, but it's not just people of color or black people or however you want to say it. White people do that too. They have that. They use that bat too. You
white
can
privilege.
Say. Yeah, they're people. They use it like I've seen people yelling in Twitter clips of, and they're white, yelling at people about, you know, standing and being like, this is a blacks only space. It's a safe space for people of color. You're not allowed in. And they're like acting as these like white shields. And like, that's not good. Like it's lots of different types of people can use this. So I guess we can't paint broad strokes because it's not like, oh, only this group does this. Like, I think that lots of groups use it.
Yeah. And I think with that being said, I do have to say that both those people, that white person that does that to protect the black people and the black person that uses his superpower bat, are both on the left, right? So
so okay, now I made it political. Okay, so let's go. Okay, we put a pin in this meaning thing. So let's go over to...
Oh, you said the pin and the identity. We were talking
the
about
identity. Sorry, I said meaning, but yeah, it was. And I think that people get identity through their meaning or form their identity by pursuing a meaning. So maybe that's why I put my words in there. Sorry. So we'll go back to the identity. So you don't even really. You said you don't think it's left or right politically. It's really just identity crisis.
Yeah. Yes, identity crisis because original sin. You know. So.
What do you, can you explain a little bit more people are waffling, people don't know who they are kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, what you're seeing today happen socially is a lack of understanding, a lack of knowing who we are. And, you know, with the advent of the internet age, you know, social media, it's like everybody is a brand unto themselves, you know, a god unto themselves, you know. So it's like the perfect clash. You have these people who are in sin, they have an identity crisis, and now you have the internet and social media, and it's just a bad clash. Where I'm trying to go with that, because I'm going to get lost in my own mind now. You have people that are longing for that fulfillment in life, right? The fulfillment that can only be found in knowing God, being known by Him. Because ultimately, I mean, the purpose of our existence is to give the glory back to God, you know, to glorify God. So when people find their identity in being a liberal and standing up for progressive causes, or when people find their identity in being on the right and standing up for yada yada yada, whatever, standing up for my right to own a gun, this, that, and the other, you end up having people that find their identities in their positions. So when you attack that position, when you disagree with that position, let me put it that way, when you disagree with the position that they found their identity in, it's as if now you're attacking that person directly. So, that's where identity comes into play. You know, everybody's finding their identity in whatever it is. And like I was telling somebody on Instagram the other day, they're a super Trump fan. I was like, bro, I commented on something they posted. I was like, bro, you don't even have a personality. Like, your personality is being a Trump supporter. You know, and
interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I said your personality is being a Trump supporter. And that goes back to identity. You have people on both sides. They don't know their identity, so they latch onto something that puts them into a tribe, because it makes us feel good to have a purpose.
And to be part of something. Yeah.
Be part of something. So like I said, I'm reiterating, when somebody attacks that which you found a purpose in, it's no longer that thing, because your identity is interconnected with the purpose. So when they attack that thing, you feel like they're attacking you as a person. So I don't know if that's kind of where...
Yes. No, I think that is 100% correct, what you just said. That actually was so good, that bit. And I would... That's another podcast. Like, that's more, like, we could go more into the identity and then into finding the meaning in that. But I really like what you just said there, and I actually am happy to leave that there, because I do have probably just about one more question, and then I'll probably wrap up. So do you – one concern is people being on the left are concerned about Trump leaving office. Is that coming up in – is it in January? That they're concerned that, like, he won't leave, or that there will be riots and people will be hurt, or because there were riots recently in DC with, like, Proud Boys and stuff like that. So it is, but whenever the Proud Boys do something, people bring up, well, Antifa did this a couple weeks ago. So it doesn't, it's like, but then when Antifa does something, well, the Proud Boys did this a few weeks, you know, like, so it's always, yeah. it's not ever. The thing, it's about, well, the other side. So are you concerns coming, or are you like, no, and I'll just switch over and no problem? Like, what do you think?
I'm sorry, ask that question one more time.
Man, I just really like, yeah, sorry, that was a lot. Are you concerned for Trump leaving office? Do you think it will go smoothly, or do you think there will be riots, or what do you think?
Yeah, no, yeah, okay. So I heard that part. I thought you asked another question after.
No.
Okay. No, I'm not concerned at all. I mean, I kind of promote this idea that Trump is going to have to be dragged out of office the way they promote it so much, it's wanting to happen. Like they want to kind of justify themselves, you know, and kind of say to the people, see, we told you this guy is freaking Hitler. He won't even leave. So, you know, they just say it over and over and over, and they hope that it'll happen. But I don't see that. I'm not concerned at all about.
Okay, well, even if he does leave, what about riots, though?
I don't.
That's why I brought up DC, because there was some violence over this situation of him not winning and riots.
Yeah, and throughout these 4 years, I don't think we have reasons to believe that people on the right are the type to go out and be violent and destroy property based on all the evidence we've had throughout these 4 years, as opposed to what we saw with the left. And what we would have saw with the left again if Donald Trump won this time around, I'm pretty confident of it.
Well, and we'll find out in a couple weeks.
Yeah, no, we certainly will. And I know your previous guest, he was concerned about that quite a bit. So, yeah, I mean, I respect his opinion.
But he said he doesn't want it. Like, he's like, I'm not hoping.
He didn't want it.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling a lot of elite people on the left kind of want it. But, you know, like I said, it's not a left or right thing with us regular, schmegular people. You know, it's just cultural when it comes down to it, and there's a lot of differences. But,
what do you mean cultural? Like class?
You want to look at, is America inherently a racist country? You have people that legitimately think that it is. You have people that legitimately think that it isn't.
Oh, and that's on the cultural end of things rather than the political end, you mean?
Yeah, okay. That's on the cultural end of things, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So and until we can come together and have a solid base and say, this is what we believe, these are the truths. If we don't have truths that we can stand on and talk to each other about things, then we can never...
Come back together.
Come back together. We can't. I mean, I'm sorry, because you have to have any game you play has rules, right?
Yeah.
It has rules for a reason.
You have to agree on the rules.
Yeah, this is what we believe. So we're playing the game on top of the rules. You can't change the rules in the middle of the game, right? And
okay, that's a good unity. Let's end on.
Let's end on that basis.
Okay, thank you so much for coming on. This was good. I think this fulfills my both sides quota. So, thanks, Pima.
I hope it somewhat did. Hey, you're for having me on the podcast. Appreciate you.
For sure. Thanks. If you would subscribe, that would be the bee's knees.